Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. To local NDP supporters in Northumberland Peterborough South, the Ipsos poll released on Wednesday must have been music to their ears. While the party has polled at about 15% over the last few weeks, the leader of the party, Jagmeet Singh, watched as his personal appeal numbers took a dramatic jump. When people were asked which leader they would best make a prime minister, 14% named Singh. That's up from 10% only a week ago. In another poll I read just this morning, his personal numbers were up by 6 points. That increase may not seem like much, but when the Conservative Party gained 4 points over the Liberals overall during the last week, it made front page news. So yes, it's notable. But what does this all mean, and what does it mean to the local campaign? To find out, I'm pleased to welcome Mallory MacDonald, the candidate for the NDP in Northumberland Peterborough South. Welcome, Mallory.
Hi, nice to be here.
I want to start out by talking about race and racism, mm-hmm. which seems to have many threads weaving through this election. Your leader became the first person of a visible minority group to lead a major Canadian federal political party permanently, which is historic and it's significant. Mm-hmm. But we also have watched as the issue of racism in Canada has reared its ugly head in several ways. First, during the New Brunswick defections of the NDP to the Green Party, where it was reported by the CTV News, your party was struggling to find candidates, and one reason given was racism. Then there was the brown face incident with Trudeau that has ignited a massive debate in the country. I want to know, in your experience talking to various people, has race or racism impacted your campaign locally?
Yeah, actually, I have been getting those questions. You know, even in interviews and things like that, you know, are they ready for, and they say, a brown man to be prime minister? And I have to, it's hard to answer it that way because, you know, I think that it has become an issue, but it's also, I think, there's a lot of fear behind it, and it's something new and they don't understand.
What do you mean by fear?
So, you know, I think it's because of, you know, where we've grown up and, you know, the kind of people that we are around. When you're not used to seeing visible minorities around, or if you've had, you know, issues growing up where you were taught that, you know, visible minorities have a problem, when suddenly someone comes and says, I want to lead your country, I could understand the misunderstanding of the fear, but it's definitely misguided. I think people are afraid that this other is coming in and they're going to change something, whereas it's definitely not the case. You know, I see Jagmeet as a Canadian first, and it was never about, like, his turban or anything about him. This guy's very educated. He's very well spoken. He's bringing a lot of issues about people forward, and it was never an issue. So it's hard for me to talk about this because the high school I went to there was 52 different languages spoken there. I was a minority, and I knew people from all over the world.
Where was
from
this?
That. This was in Kitchener.
Okay.
We were the ESL school, so English as a second language. So we had people from all over the world, new immigrants that would come, you know, to go to high school, and they could learn English while they were doing it. And it was never an issue for me because I was used to it. So then when I came here and I'm getting asked these questions about, are we ready for somebody of a different religion or a different race to be our prime minister? I'm saying absolutely we are, because they are part of our country and they have been for a long time. and they're just regular Canadians. It has nothing to do with their race or their religion. So it was kind of it was hard for me to answer kind of those questions because it's never been an issue for me. So I have to understand kind of where people are coming from first and then how I can circumvent and educate them in a way that they understand that maybe whatever they were fearing before was unwarranted.
Do you think there are people in this riding who are going to another party because the national leader of the NDP is a visible minority?
Unfortunately, I think that is what's happening. I didn't think that it would be such an issue, but it seems to me that we're finding out, you know, where people's truth lies. And I don't want to say, you know, we don't need them, but if that's the case, that they're leaving a party because of the way someone looks or their religion or their race, I would love to educate them and bring them back, but that's definitely not people that we want to be in the forefront of our party if they have a problem with that, because it should not be an issue. We're Canadians.
I know you were acclaimed only a few days after the writ was dropped. Mm-hmm. You ran for the nomination in Peterborough-Kawartha and lost to Candace Shaw before here.
Yeah.
Why were you parachuted in?
So it was mostly because the ridings were finding it difficult to find candidates. We had six candidates who had put their names in here, and through various reasons and issues, you know, for personal reasons, things like that, they dropped out. And so it was finding a candidate that was already vetted by the party, who was passionate about the issues and also had local connections. And me working here at the beginning of my career and being a student, it kind of seemed like a perfect fit where I still know the issues and I know people here. And it wasn't as if I'm being parachuted across the country. It was, let's help out all the NDP ridings, because especially in this area, I'm in contact with all of the candidates in the ridings, and we're really taking a team approach to this to build up the NDP.
But why was it so difficult for your party to get a candidate in place, a local person? I mean, I know that on September 1st, the NDP barely had half their writings, mm-hmm, with there's candidates. And now I believe that there's, like, as of last night, there were still 10 writings. Why such a struggle?
There's a specific reason. It wasn't a struggle. It was a concerted effort to get the very best of the best. And they were taking their time vetting, making sure that these were prime candidates, because we really want to run this election right. And so we were finding that it was just the pool of people who wanted to do it. You know, we would ask a bunch of people. It was just getting smaller and smaller. And we have very specific things that the party was looking for, and I'm glad they found it in me, but they wanted to run this race right, and they took their time, and they said they're going to fill all the spots, and they did, but there was a reason for that. It wasn't that people don't want to support us. That's not the struggle. It was that we really wanted to have the best candidates out there.
Do you think the fact that the party leader is a visible minority had anything to do with the inability of the local riding to field a candidate before the last minute?
No, absolutely not. That was never a reason. No, okay. Not at all.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Is the Trudeau incident going to impact the local campaign, do you think?
Maybe help it.
How so? How do you think it is?
Because, you know, there's people who can just blindly forgive him and move on and still, you know, support Liberal. And then there's people that have said, you know, the last incident was after a long history of incidents, and people are saying, oh, well, the first ones were in high school, you know, boys will be boys. They do stupid things in high school. In 2001, when he was 29 and he did that, I was 16 and I knew it was wrong then. I was in high school. I never even thought as a child that that would be something okay to do, and I always knew it was wrong. So the fact that even as a teenager and into his well adulthood of a teacher who was teaching young minds at the time, showing that as this is who he was very alarming to some people. And I think that will change their mind going to the polls for sure.
Okay, I appreciate that. But when you're out talking to people, when you're knocking on doors, are you getting feedback in this light? Is it what everyday people are talking about?
No, actually, I think thankfully it's not been a big issue. It's kind of like the last thing people will ask, you know, have you found it difficult because he is Sikh? Have you found it difficult because he's a visible minority? And our answer is no, we haven't found it difficult, but I'm not being asked that. I'm being asked about what we're going to bring to them, how we're going to give them a more affordable life, and the more of the policy questions. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, when the news cycle is so quick, this happened a couple weeks ago, people are starting to, you know, forget it. And I don't want them to forget it, but I also don't want it to be the main issue of our campaign because it takes away from all of the other stuff that we're talking about.
Well, let's talk about then. When you're out and when you're knocking on doors, what are people asking you about?
They're asking about how they're going to have better housing, how they're going to be able to feed their kids more, what services have been cut, how we're going to bring back those things. It's basically people are worried about their everyday life because it's getting harder and harder to live.
Well, then let's unpack that. Let's start off by talking about affordable housing.
Sure.
Now, I know you were part of a debate yesterday about affordable housing.
Yes.
And I'm aware that your party is pledging to create 500,000 new units of affordable housing immediately.
Yeah.
So let's break that down.
Well, over 10 years, it'll be 500,000.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So let's break that down then. There's about 235,000 people who are homeless in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that there are about 2,500 families and individuals who are either homeless or on the verge of becoming homeless in Northumberland.
Yeah.
What is your party going to do for those people specifically?
So we'll give them, I know it's hard to say, we will give them help right away, but that means funding. It's funding transitional housing so that while we're building the units, people have a place to go and live so they're not on the street. The housing that we were building, we're also giving incentives to private corporations to build affordable housing by taking away the GST when they're building affordable housing. We're going to have half of those done in 5 years. So within 5 years, it would be 250,000, which would cover the people who don't have affordable housing that you named, the 200,000. So it's hard to say specific things that you're going to do because you have to work with the municipalities and the provinces, and you have to create a plan with them and do it in a way that they agree with. But I think the main point that we want to get across is that we will fight and do it as soon, like right away, and put that funding into it, and not only just say, here's the money, you know, we're going to fund these things, but actually have people working with provinces, municipalities on the ground, side by side, working on these plans, rather than just, here, we're Big Daddy shelling out money and not take care of the programs that we start.
Okay, so, and that sounds wonderful in the short term.
Yes.
You know, you're giving me the GST off, I'll build you some affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
But then the moment somebody moves out of that housing, then it, all of a sudden it goes on the market, price gets jacked through the roof,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden all that savings and all that investment go up in smoke because it's now part of the overall real estate market. How do we know that the units are going to be built and will stay affordable so that generation after generation, as the need arrives, that we're actually investing in our future and not just giving somebody a break in the short term?
Because the units that we build are not going to be private. They're going to be public. They're going to be co-ops. It's going to be government run and owned. So they will never be sold to go up. They will always be that affordable housing. And hopefully, eventually, the ideal world, the goal could be that we don't need affordable housing, but those will always be owned by us.
Okay. We know, and I know you've talked a little bit about this, but maybe you could flesh it out a little bit more, but we know that there are a lot of people who are working, but they can't afford the rent to live in an apartment or have to live far away from their jobs to afford a place to live. What's your party going to do for all people across the spectrum looking for an affordable place to live, not just the homeless?
Mm-hmm.
What about that spectrum after that?
So, like, are you talking about, like, people who want to buy houses and,
yes,
and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so people who want to get an apartment in Toronto or in Coburg.
Well, we're going to make it more affordable to buy a house. The thing with the housing markets in, you know, especially Toronto and Vancouver, the issue with those housing markets have been they've been bumped up because of foreign investors and foreign people coming in and buying up a lot of property and then building condos on it. So when we have that happen, we're going to have a tax, like a foreign buyer's tax of 15% on anyone who wants to come in and take over that property. So hopefully it can diminish a lot of that. Okay. It's hard to say what it will exactly look like, but that is the plan that we will implement for that.
So that sounds good for Toronto and Vancouver.
Yeah.
But in Cobourg, you have housing prices going through the roof. Mm-hmm. You can't. We have affordable housing shortage. I mean, what is it? 0.3% apartment availability.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to help us down here?
So it is about building those units immediately. Our main plan is building those units, but also if you're trying to buy a house, we're making it more affordable. We're going to help with your down payment. We also want to reintroduce the 30-year mortgage plans that they have, and we'll provide resources to facilitate like co-housing and ease the access of financing offered by CMHC backed co-ownership mortgages.
Okay, so how's that going to help me if I'm in my first job? I'm not making a whole heck of a lot of money. I work in Port Hope. How is that going to help me find somewhere affordable to live? What part of that plan helps me do that or helps me buy my first house?
Is we make those units available. Okay. So before we can build them, we will be putting funding into, like I said, transition. So we will find units and we will take them over and we will provide that right away for people. Our idea is to help them immediately. So however we can do that, we have to come down to the ground. We have to ask them exactly what they need. Our office is right beside and backed on to low-income housing, and I see that every day when I drive by. And our plan would immediately get them in more affordable units or work with landlords and as far as maybe, you know, down the line, I know legislation is hard to get across, but maybe there needs to be legislation to stop the rise of rental costs, especially for low-income housing, and be able to prevent landlords from, pricing out people who live there just for, you know, an extra, you know, $100, $200. But that also ties into for people who have those, who own those condo buildings and things like that. They are from wealthy corporations, and that ties into our wealth tax as well. So
in what way?
So when we have our wealth tax, we're taxing the richest corporations. We're taxing the richest 1%, and that will affect the housing because that gives us revenue to enable us to get those housing units to the people right away. Okay. So it kind of circles around and kind of all ties in together. But again, it is a plan that needs to be sat down with of the municipalities and the provinces because we can't do anything without their input. Obviously, we can't be like, we're federal, so we're going to do whatever we want and crash through. It is about building those bridges and working with people and getting the help to those people immediately.
Okay. All right. So let's move on. And I know right now, if we were to go to several places across this country, there is right now a climate strike going on.
There is. I'm going this afternoon, actually.
Indeed. So a lot of people are talking about climate change and the climate. And I'd like you to tell us, first of all, what is the NDP's position on the carbon tax?
So we agree with the carbon tax. Because there is science, like peer-reviewed science backing that it does change people's behaviors. What people don't get and what the conservatives didn't tell, I will give the liberals credit where credit is due, it is revenue neutral, so you get that back in your taxes. It's merely a tax to change behaviors at the source so that we can automatically think about what we're doing. And then it can't all be about that. there has to be a comprehensive plan and a strategy to go along with that. It's not just the carbon tax. That's not gonna do anything for our emissions. It's just going to make people aware and change their behaviors around.
Well, I know your platform, you talk about going after large polluters. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So we end subsidies for fossil fuel industries and large producers, corporations, because they aren't being taxed on that and they have loopholes so they can get out of being taxed for the pollution that they spew. And then we're taxing the regular people. So we're paying for that when they're still polluting the air. So it's about ending those subsidies, ending the loopholes where they can put their money elsewhere. We need to tax the money that they make off of the backs of Canadians.
So if I'm a smokestack industry, mm-hmm. you're saying you're going to tax me more?
It's not, because those companies are not being taxed right now. They have loopholes where they're not being taxed. It's not we're taxing them more. We're actually going to make them pay the tax they should be paying.
Okay.
Yeah.
So usually this is businesses, and oftentimes when business gets charged something, they trickle it down so that the rest of us end up paying for that and they don't lose any revenue. Isn't a plan like that going to hurt the economy overall then?
No, it's what it does is it forces the people who make billions of dollars to actually pay their fair share. Why should we pay the tax when they don't?
Okay, fair enough. I'd like to come back to this. We're going to take a break right now for some commercials, and I'm talking to Mallory McDonald, candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South for election 2019. Please stay tuned to Consider This Northumberland on 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. And you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guest today is Mallory McDonald, a candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South. We're talking about her platform for the upcoming federal election on October 21st. Just before the break, we were talking about climate change and we talked a bit about the carbon tax. I was reading over the climate change platform for the NDP and I was struck by how similar it is to the Green Party. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me in some detail how it's different?
I think some of our targets were different. I have to double check on their policy. I know that we wanted to have everything retrofitted and net zero carbon by, like for housing, by 2030. And I think that theirs was, it was for new buildings, 2030. And I think theirs was 2050, but I have to look at that because I'm not sure that's correct.
Okay, so just so we're clear, the Green Party aims to reduce emissions to 60% below 2005 levels by 2030. Which is doubling the current Paris Agreement targets.
Okay, yeah. So ours are, we want to revise the 2030 GHG target to ensure emission reductions are in line with what the science says is necessary, and obviously the 1.5 degrees to keep it below that. We do have a similar plan because we think, you know, the same on some of those issues. I can't say we're that much different from their platform, but it's about everything else that's different in their platform. That's where we differ. There's a lot of things that we agree on in climate.
Oh, so it's other parts of your platform that you differentiate yourself from the Greens. Is that
yeah.
what you're telling me?
Yes.
So you'd also ban fracking?
I'll have to look that up.
Okay.
I don't agree with fracking, I can tell you that.
Okay.
I'm not sure of the party's position exactly on that.
What about importing of foreign oil?
No.
Are you opposed to any new fossil fuel projects being started?
No.
All right.
Sorry, are we opposed to it? Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
We don't want to have anything started, and we want to get rid of the extension immediately of the pipeline that we bought.
All right. There's been a lot of talk about the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the NDP on the Trans Mountain Pipeline?
So we want to shut down the extension immediately. we shouldn't have bought it in the first place, but it's bought. So what we are doing is with the wealth tax, that will create enough revenue so that we can go into that sector and train and retrain people into a green economy. So it's not like we're shutting the pipeline down immediately. We will still be using revenue from that, but the revenue that we gain from the wealth tax, we will use, and we won't need that extension. We won't need the revenue from oil. So we're trying to transition our economy so we don't need that revenue so that we can go green to eventually never using fossil fuels again. But it's about training and retraining people. There are oil wells out there that have just been abandoned by the companies and they need to be cleaned up. It does not take a lot of money and retraining to get the people there to clean up those things. So that creates jobs. But it's also, it's about a transition so that we're not leaving workers behind. We're not immediately shutting down that industry and stomping over workers' rights.
But I guess the thing I asked the Green Party a very similar thing, but there's a couple of repercussions that come out of that. And the one that often strikes me is you end up isolating Alberta in the process because they depend so heavily on this. And I know that you're going to retrain, and I know that the aspiration is to put people into new green jobs. And I appreciate that, and I'm sure a lot of people do. But if I was an Albertan, I'd feel like my country was betraying me. And I know, you know, that brings discord
so
in the country.
So I push back on that a little bit.
Please.
Because if we're giving you a job that's in a clean economy that makes the same amount of money, if not more, with benefits, and has your company change into a green company, how is that any different when you're not losing any revenue? We're just changing one job to another. So it's not like, why is it this love for oil that is stopping people? It's the job. It shouldn't be what we take out of the ground. We have to make these choices. This is an existential crisis. Our species can die from climate change. We could have millions of people being refugees from climate change, and we will have to take them in. You know, it's, what do you think people with their islands underwater are going to do? They have to come inland. And so that's going to change our economy as well. So if we don't do these changes now, we are at a loss. And I feel for those people, but we're not taking their jobs away. We're giving them another job that's better for the environment, better for them. It's going to have them have workers' rights that they never had before. We're also spurring investment. We want to create what's called a Canadian Climate Bank so that companies can invest in low carbon energy. So we're doing everything we can to make it so that there is no other choice. Why wouldn't you go green? So I don't think that we're definitely not abandoning Alberta. We are thinking about them immediately. We could just say we're turning off the oil pipeline, and that's that. Sorry, that would be abandoning them. But we are coming in and giving them the jobs, and we're not doing it tomorrow. We're making sure that they have the right resources, that we take care of them while they're transitioning. And it's also about, so if they do find themselves out of work, which they do already, you know, the oil companies are doing that to them already. Some people can't find work. We have EI, and we're going to end the black hole in EI, that if you're going to school, you can still collect EI. We're going to increase the benefits and actually allow access to benefits, which disproportionately affects women, because we all pay into EI, but only, I believe, 40% of us actually can get the benefits, that we qualify for those benefits. So we're changing that as well.
Well, let's talk about that a bit more then, since you brought it up. I understand that your party is offering a basic income program, and you want to pilot.
Yeah. So we need to pilot because, so we know it works in other countries. We just have to see how it works here first. We need to do what was cut by Ford. We were going to be doing a pilot project so we could get that information, but we couldn't do it because it was cut. So we want to start that again, go through that, and then the goal is to have that nationally. And then where we can, eventually add a basic income for people, but we're not saying we're doing it immediately. We have to have the science behind it. We are a party that actually isn't going to say, we're doing this and we don't care what it affects. We want to know how it affects people. And also, when that happens, we want that to eventually go across the country, but also that ties into having other things free, like tuition and things like that. So those are going to be slow transitions. We're not immediately giving these out right away. We are doing it in a fiscally responsible way that tackles every issue together, but not run a huge deficit.
Are you prepared to say here and now that the basic income will be in place by the time the end of your first term of office? Because oftentimes these pilots, we get the information and then things get put off, and then waiting till the next election things get implemented.
No, absolutely. Our platform is day one. Anything we can do day one to help people, we're implementing the pilot project right away. We need that data. We need to see how it works, because we need to see how we can service people. This is a party about people.
I completely appreciate that, and I don't want to make it sound like I don't appreciate what the pilot. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm asking you is that sometimes there's a pilot and then there's a study and then we can't put it in right away, and then all of a sudden we're at the end of a term and Mm-mm. nothing got implemented. So you're saying that by the pilot and everything will be in place
by the end
of your first term of office.
Absolutely.
Let's go back then. You mentioned tuition and some other things that you want to change in regards to allowing a greater access. Pharmacare, mm-hmm. I think, was another one of them that you want to go nationally with.
And dental.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So those three things. Okay, that sounds wonderful. But at the same time, people might say, well, just a moment. You know, where's this money going to come from? And isn't this going to devalue post-secondary education?
Nope.
Isn't this going to mean our drugs... You know, everybody's going to start taking way more drugs. There's a whole bunch of arguments that get made in these cases. So I'd like you to just talk
misguided.
About it. Okay, so help guide us.
So, sorry, what was the first?
I think the first one was tuition.
So free tuition. So for free tuition, that's not devalue. That's going to allow access for a lot of people that didn't have access to education before.
Okay.
Me not working and not being a nurse anymore, I have to go back to school, but I can't afford it. So for me to get a job and continue going forward in my life, I would need that education. And we need to provide that for people. Your second, sorry. There's a lot of things in there.
Yes, pharmacare.
Oh, for pharmacare. So I'm taking a lot more drugs. That's kind of funny to me. When you're able to afford your drugs, you don't need to take other things that you can afford. So here's an example. So I can use it for me. I am on two medications that help with my pain, but I am not on a pain medication because my pain medication costs $120 a month. So I'm trying to attack my pain from different avenues because those are the drugs that I take. So instead of taking two medications, I could actually just take one.
All right. That sounds like a great idea. But I'm sure there are listeners that are sitting out there going, okay, I really feel badly for you, Mallory, and I'd like to see you get those drugs that you need.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a program that's going to cover everybody. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of people out there that, they're on a program through their work, or maybe they have the means by which they can afford the medications. Why don't we just help good people like you and let everybody else pay for it? And we'd be less expensive and maybe it would be more affordable.
Well, it's already
for us as a country.
Yeah, it's been priced out. Like our tax plan has been priced out by the PBO, and they see it as affordable, and that would be completely paid for. Also, it drives down the price of medication as well, because as a government, if we're lobbying as one big entity to the drug companies, it doesn't allow the drug companies to raise their prices. They won't have any choice but to deal with us as a whole. Also, we believe in fairness. If one person gets it, everyone should get it. It doesn't matter what stage of life you're in. And it will be working with the insurance companies, because yes, other people are covered. But here's the thing, for employers that pay for their insurance for their sorry, their employees to get drugs, they won't have to pay for that anymore. So that will save them money that they can then invest in their company, maybe hire more people, grow our economy. So when they're not paying for those benefits, we can grow elsewhere. So it kind of cancels itself out, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Before we get too far and our time's running out, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Sure. I'm originally from Kitchener. I moved to Peterborough to go to school to be a nurse. I went to Fleming and Trent. I became a nurse, and my first job was in Coburg at Extendicare. I was the RN there. As a student, I worked in Port Hope at the Port Hope Health Unit. But I became disabled, unfortunately. Due to a spinal issue, which has really affected me. And that is what has thrown me kind of into this. After seeing where I was in life and seeing the people around me, I'm standing in like a food bank line, and I'm finally seeing people for the first time, really. As a nurse, I always wanted to help people, but I didn't really know the issue. And so when I saw that, I saw what my stigma was telling me was wrong, and that even though I'm in a bad situation in my life, I am still quite privileged compared to some of the people that I'm standing around. And I realized that I could give them a voice. And that was kind of what made me want to run, because I didn't think that we were getting a fair shake. And that's kind of who I am as a person. I've always wanted to help people. I've always been involved in the community. Most of my volunteer work is in theater, where I sing and dance. that keeps me active. When I can't be, I'm able to, it's because it's volunteer, I'm able to rest and things like that. But that's kind of me in a nutshell. Has just been, I've really done everything for other people, and I kind of don't know how to say no or how not to do it. So when this came up, it was a no-brainer.
In the last election, your party pulled 10,000 votes, and in 2011, there were 11,000 votes. That was under redistribution. But under the old Northumberland Quinty West riding, the NDP received 12,000 votes. That was your best election at about 20% of the overall number of people who voted. It was also the time when Jack Layton led the party. If you go back historically, usually the NDP take between 8,000 and 10,000 votes. The Green Party seems pretty optimistic this time around that they're going to make a major breakthrough. What numbers are you seeing right now?
I actually don't look at the numbers. I look at the people that I'm talking to. If I get a sense that we're doing well there, I think we can do well in the numbers. I try not to get bogged down worrying about percentages, because I know that the way I reach people is by talking to them, and I don't pay attention to those numbers, because if you run as hard as you can and you do everything you can do, it resonates with people. And I know that our goal is to have at least 15% of the vote, but right now I'm not paying attention to that. I'm just trying to get out and meet people.
How do you set a target of 15%? Where did that come from?
That's from the EDA. They want, because I'm trying to think of the percent, like a percentage wise, what the last election was. Like you said, votes, but percentage of the vote.
You've dropped about 3. So you're between 15% and 20% on average.
Okay, so we want to keep that. We want to keep that goal. I would love to grow the riding and get more membership and people in. So that's basically my goal in this. And to reach not just in Coburg and Port Hope, where most people, you know, think is that we have Clarington, we have Brighton, we have way up in Norwood. I need to reach those people and bring them in. And I think that if we do that, because we have really only focused in this area mostly, that we can definitely grow our numbers for sure. So that was just the goal that they had from the previous election, to at least get that, if not more.
Okay. You often hear talk about strategic voting.
Yeah.
And the historic numbers say that usually in this riding, it's a two-way race. It has been for the last few decades. So why should I vote for you when I really feel strongly that I don't want the other people, the other parties to get in? So, and if I vote NDP, I'm just throwing away my vote, and the party I really dislike will get in. What do you say to people when they tell you that?
I say that pretty much everyone is saying that, and if everyone who said that voted for us, we would actually win. Everyone's afraid of that, and you don't have to choose between these two parties anymore. You just don't. And even if we get a minority, they have to work with us. Like, people don't understand that there are other ways to form government, and it's not just about the big person winning all the time. I hear that so much, and I get so like, I want to shake you, because if you all voted for us, we would actually win. So I think that's the message I want to get out, is you don't have to be afraid. It's strategic voting that has gotten us to this point in the first place.
Okay. The logic of that, though, is a bit different, because what you're talking about is overall. So you have to win the ridings to create a minority government.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about is internal. So, I mean, you could get, say, your best was what, 20%. Yeah, about 12,000 votes. So say you got 15,000. You brought in an extra 3,000 people that are saying right now they might be voting strategic. You're still going to lose the overall election. You're still going to lose the riding, and their vote may not have carried the weight that they want it to carry. I guess I get a little, I always find this debate fascinating, because, you know, one of the arguments for proportional representation is that your vote does count. And I wonder, why aren't we talking about either proportional representation or other things when we talk about strategic voting?
Yeah.
I guess that's my question.
Well, we are. Like, we want proportional representation. That is the best. Because then there could be other parties as well. It doesn't just have to be these big four, right? People's voices can actually be heard. Unfortunately, that is the electoral system that we were in, and you know, the Liberals said they were going to change that, and a lot of people voted for them because of that, and I just kind of say to those people, well, where did your strategic vote get you there?
Okay.
Because we didn't get proportional representation. We didn't end first past the post. And if you vote for NDP, and we win enough ridings, we can get a minority, and we can change that. Like, we can actually fight to change this electoral system that we're in, you know, and go forward. I think that everyone realizes that all around the world, we are kind of at this crossroads where we're either going to keep doing the same and be miserable about it, or we're going to fight and go forward and do something great together. And I know that sounds cliche and, you know, soundbitey, but it really is true to me. And I feel that in my heart, that we have to, regardless of party even, we have to work together to solve these issues. And I think that with the NDP, we are showing that. We want to bring people into the fold. We want to bring the everyday person's voice out and do it all together, and not have a few people that could care less about us running the country and just doing what they want to do.
You mentioned it briefly, but I'd like to flesh it out a bit more. Is there a talk within the NDP about holding the balance of power in a minority government?
Oh, like that we would not work with people? No, not at all. If we had a minority government, it would force people, the majority, like whoever wins the majority, that that they have to agree and work together and actually have meaningful change. And that is all we want, is to work together and that would force them to work together, I guess I could say. And no, there would never be any like strategic holding up things like that. We're here to fight for what the people put us there for, and the rights of the everyday person and everyone. Like I said, when we put these programs into place, everyone benefits from them, and it doesn't matter where you are in your life. So it is only about forcing people to work with us and work together, and not just do what they've already decided they want to do, and ignore half of the people, you know, the percentage of people that voted for us. You know, they're essentially ignoring those voters as well. When they're not including all the parties together, you're alienating those voters that voted for them, because they're in government too. They have a voice and they have every right to be there.
So for the listeners out there, why should we vote for Mallory McDonald?
Probably. No, I shouldn't say probably. You should vote for me because I am a regular person. I've told a lot of people this. I'm not, even though people correct me and say I am a politician, I'm not a politician. I don't come from that life. I don't have a political dynasty backing me. It's just me. It's grassroots. And I care about the people. And it's about putting real people back in government. That's what it was supposed to be. It was a representative of the people who voted you in to bring your voice there and to say, this is what we want in our area. And I think that other parties get bogged down with staying on party lines and doing what the party wants to do despite what their voters want. And I would never do that. I'm not going to blindly follow a prime minister and say he's my boss. I mean, my boss is the people who put me here. And if there's something I don't agree with, which hasn't happened yet in the NDP, I wouldn't vote for it. I would tell them, I'm sorry. Like, my voters don't want this. I'm not going to vote for this. So it's about your voice. And I think the NDP is really good about that. They're allowing us to be able to have our own voice. They're not saying you can't say this or you have to say this on the radio. We are allowed to have our own ideas as long as we stay within the values of the party, which is how I live my life anyway, every day. So I really believe in the platform, and I really believe in the outpour of what he wants to, what Jagmeet wants to accomplish, and that is bringing people together and having them have a voice and a say in what we do to govern them. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It was great.
I really appreciate you coming in.
Well, I appreciate that too. It's always great to have a long form interview, because then you can actually think out your thoughts rather than try and stuff them in a 2-minute response in a debate.
I'm glad. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Next week, I have Frank Vaughan of the People's Party of Canada coming in, and I'm looking forward to that interview. As part of the coverage of the federal election, Northumberland 89.7 FM and Consider This are teaming up to help you get your questions and concerns addressed by the candidates. So we're asking you to please send us your questions for the candidates. We will collect them and send them off to the candidates' campaign teams to get answers. We will then post those questions and answers to our websites. That means that if you have a question or concern you want to address, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can post to my Facebook page or send it through Twitter. There will also be a feature on my website that will allow you to submit questions. I want to emphasize that we're looking for questions, not rants, insults, or partisan commentary. I will remove those items from social media and block you immediately. But questions will be welcomed. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves about this show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page at Consider This. Or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you'd like to listen to this show again, or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.
Truly local.